it went straight down the middle. Then it started to...
Well, there were a whole lot of Hall of Famers you were competing with in this era. You know, as we get into the 80s and the prize money is up substantially from the previous decade, thanks in large part to Colgate Palmolive, David Foster, the whole thing with the Dinosaur beginning in 1972. So the game had really changed. And then, you know, Nancy Lopez, yeah, who many kind of describe as the LPGA's Arnold Palmer at the time, mm-hmm, emerges. But you got Pat Bradley, Amy, Beth, Julie, Patty Sheehan, Hollis Stacey. You got some great players you're up, yeah, against every week.
Yeah, yeah. I had somebody email me one time and said that the 1980s was the golden age of the LPGA, only from the standpoint that there were more Hall of Famers playing in that decade than in any other decade on the history of the tour.
Yeah.
So it was fun to be a part of that. And when I look at all those players, they were all athletes, not just great golfers. They all were athletes in other sports. And it was almost like, because golf or tennis were the only two avenues at the time that you could play professionally, it was these athletic women choosing, well, I'm going to try to make it in golf or tennis, because, yeah, those are my only options. So I really think that was one of the reasons that they performed at such a high level, was because they weren't just golfers, they were athletes.
So, Bruce, we go from 1984, where Betsy was player of the year and the leading money winner, with three wins in 85, two wins in 86, which finished up with her going back-to-back at the rail with that closing 63. And now we get into 1987, a Vare Trophy winner, and four more wins that year.
Yeah, what a year. Started off at the Circle K in Tucson at Randolph Golf Club, where you beat Jan Stevenson by two. Mm-hmm.
I do remember that. The last day it hailed when we were playing.
Nice.
This hailstorm came through, and I think I made, on one hole, I made about a 45-footer literally, you know, across the green when it was hailing. But, yeah, that was always a fun event. I had the couple that I used to stay with down there. I still keep in touch with them to this day, and it was, you know, we played on a public golf course.
Good one too. Randolph Park was a nice course.
The guys played on that at one time.
Yeah.
And so it was fun, and it was kind of right in the middle of town, and it was a fun event to play.
Well, let's talk about major number one, Bruce, huh?
That's right. Six of them, but the first one comes at the Nabisco Dinosaur. Guess what? In another playoff.
Okay.
Right. Patty Sheehan.
Yeah, I just have had a couple times that it's just ended up in the playoff. And I believe on the 16th hole in the regulation, I hold it from the bunker. I had hit it right into the bunker and I hit a really nice bunker shot. It was, you know, going to be close if it didn't go in. It was just trickling and it trickled right into the hole for birdie. And I wasn't paired with Patty, but then, of course, we started the playoff, and we started it on 15, which was a par four, tight par four. And I actually drove it to the right in the trees, where I just had to pitch it back to the fairway. And I know I had like 90 yards to the flag. I get it up and down for par, and yeah, then end up winning with a par on the 16th hole, the next hole in the playoff. I think Patty three-putted, and I made par to win.
Yeah, she three-putted from 15 feet. And, Bruce, if I recall, that might have been her mulligan.
To her?
Well, yeah. We'll ask you this later, Betsy. One of our questions will be, you got plenty of time to think about that, but that might have been her mulligan, was that putt on that hole. But you were the 54 hole leader with Pat Bradley, who finished solo third, one back, and then Patty closes with a 65 to kind of get into the playoff with you. So you held your own. Opened with three straight birdies at that last round before holding that shot on 16.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't remember that. Yeah.
You remember what Laura Davies did that tournament? Probably not. She led and opened with a 66. Of course, nobody really knew her at the time, right?
Okay. Yeah.
She then went on to win the Women's U.S. Open later that year.
I was going to say she won the Open at in New Jersey, and I think that was her. And I think we ended up changing the rules so that she could become a full member of the tour. You know, if anyone won on tour, they could automatically become a member.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before that, that rule didn't exist. So.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, anyway, how did that first major feel? Did that change anything for you?
No, obviously winning that, it just kept momentum going. And as I say, you know, what I remember was just the holding the bunker shot and then the turnaround in the playoff where it looked again like Patty was going to win. I mean, I'm 90 yards from the hole and in two, and she's, you know, 20 feet from the hole in two. So, and it just turned around.
Well, that wasn't the last time you guys were going to meet.
Yeah, I think we were paired together in an open that I won. We were paired in the last round together.
We'll talk about that. So finishing up in 87, Bruce, we got the McDonald's Championship at DuPont. And DuPont was the site, as some people recall, of 11 straight LPGA championships. So if you like DuPont Country Club, you might have been able to bag a few LPGAs there.
Yeah, that was I would sometimes drive back and forth from Reading, depending on my tee time. And then other times I stayed with a family friend, you know, close by if I had an early time. And so it was a fun event for me because my parents would always come to watch that event. I did like the golf course there. McDonald's, that was, it wasn't a major for a while. It became a major later on. But at the time, even though it wasn't a major for a number of years, it was our largest purse on the tour. It was kind of a fight between the Dinosaur, Nabisco Dinosaur, and McDonald's as to which was the largest purse. So it definitely was a great event to win. And it was a lot of fun for me to play. And just because I always had a lot of support there from not only friends and family that came down from Reading, but also, you know, because I was, quote, kind of local, I had a lot of fan support too.
So you finished the year off that year in 87 at the Atlantic City LPGA Classic, or commonly known as ShopRite, at Seaview Marriott Resort, where you beat Nancy Lopez by 3 shots.
Okay. Yeah, that was another course that I liked a lot. And Seaview, it's an old Donald Ross course. It's not particularly long, but you have to keep the ball in play. It has very small greens. So I always felt as though if you were a good iron player, that you'd be rewarded that week. And it was just one of my favorite courses to play on tour. And I won that event 3 times. Twice at Seaview and once when we played at another course called Great Bay, but it was a fun event again to play in. And the course that we played, the Donald Ross course there, it's a little bit linksy, which I like too.
Yeah. We go to 88 now, and 3 more wins. You open up again the second win at the Women's Kemper Open, this time at Princeville on Kauai by one over Beth Daniel. And you're not afraid to go low, are you?
I don't know. Did I play that? That might have been the year we had so much rain. I don't know that the first round got canceled entirely. And then the next round, we could only play 16 of the 18 holes because one hole was still, you know, too waterlogged. And then the other hole that was beside it would have been logistically hard to get down there. So we just played a 16 whole round of golf. So
isn't that amazing?
It's only 16 holes. And then of course the last 2 rounds were then, you know, 18 holes each. So it was a 52 hole event instead of 72 holes. So that might be why the score's so low there, Mike.
Yeah, maybe that's why you opened with a 63, huh?
Yeah. There's minus 2 holes. It was, one was a par 3 and one was a par 4 that we skipped the first day.
So, yeah, you know, okay.
I should try that, trying to break 80 sometime.
Yeah, I like that idea.
So, and in fact, I think because of that, Kemper moved the tournament back to Maui the next year. Because the Pro-Am had gotten canceled. We had to go putt in the lobby of the hotel. They put together a putting course that we played.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. So we went back to Maui the next year at Wailea at that end of the island.
Yeah. Well, you come back to Illinois. You must have liked the rail. Mm-hmm. Third time, this time over Margaret Ward. Three wins in 4 years there.
Okay. Yeah, when you're comfortable, I was staying in housing right on the course by that time that people that, you know, as I said, and I also represented the rail for a little bit. And so we had a party afterwards. That was one that my parents often came to watch. I believe they saw all my wins there. So that was fun too.
Hear that? That's the sound of a walk-off albatross, a 2 on a par 5 to win a 2-day golf tournament. That shot happened to me, 1 in 600 million odds. Since then, people call me Albie. Now, I've told this story so often, my friends can't take it. I'm pretty sure my wife, next time I tell her, she's going to leave me. So I decided to start a podcast to tell the entire world about it because it deserves it. It's the craziest shot you've never heard of. And guess what? There's tons more stories like this all around golf. And that's what our podcast is all about. Join me and my fellow degenerates, Panda and Shepherd, as we dive into them. Insane bets, crazy what-if scenarios, and all the you-had-to-be-there type moments in golf. Find us wherever you get your podcast. Did I tell you about my albatross?
Yeah. And then you finish up 1988, the Cellular One Ping Golf Championship. Mm-hmm. And that was a win by one over Colleen Walker.
Okay. Yeah, I think I had a chip in coming down the stretch. One of the last two or three holes that maybe gave me the lead. And then I ended up winning. And that year we played at Riverside. At one point we used to go back and forth between Columbia Edgewater and Riverside. And both of those courses were really nice. I always enjoyed playing in Portland. The courses that we got to play there were really good. And I enjoyed being there.
Yeah. Well, you know, Bruce and I talk a lot with our guests about what's going on inside the ropes. Occasionally we'll see gaps in careers and ask people what happened, and the answer always is, well, life was happening.
Okay.
But for you, no breaks. I mean, you're just on a 10-year roll here, but describe what life was like. You're now a major winner. You've got several wins in your belt. You're over $1 million in career earnings at this point. So what was life like on tour right then?
Golf's interesting because even when you're playing well, you still feel like there's ups and downs. You feel like you're struggling, mm-hmm. At times. My best year was the year we're going to talk about next, 1989. And even at the top of your game, you don't feel like you play well all the time and kind of feel like you're always battling it. I mean, golf's such a challenging game that way. For me, I often felt that way. I mean, there are a few days where you start on the range and your timing just happens to work out really well. And you think, gosh, I'm going to play really well. But then I've had it opposite where I've hit it horribly on the range and then, got to the course and it just turned around somehow. It's golf. That's why we love the game. I was playing
golf, that the truth?
Playing golf this week with a guy that, he'd hit a good shot and he'd go, great game. We fell in love with. And it is.
Yeah, but it can turn on you quite quickly.
Oh, certainly can. I mean, I've seen players even today, there's been a couple players that Yanni sang that was seemed unbeatable. And then next thing you know, isn't playing well. I think that happened maybe with Ian Baker Finch, where he played so well.
Sure did.
And then it just went down the tubes quickly. You just never know. You just never know.
Yep. And we covered that in great detail with Ian on an earlier show. He found himself chasing distance, which a lot of people are trying to do these days.
Very much so. Very much so.
So yeah. You mentioned that 89 was your best year. 6 wins in 1989, Jamaica Classic, Women's Kemper, USX, McDonald's, Nestle, and of course your second major at the Women's U.S. Open. But what a way to start! You know, you go down to a trial golf club down in Jamaica, and you beat Nancy Lopez by one there.
Yeah, that was kind of one of the ones where I felt like I was struggling on the range, and I remember distinctly standing over the putt on the first hole, and the way they had it, they changed the way that we played the holes, and so the first hole was a par three, and I didn't hit a particularly good shot, and I had about a 40-foot putt. And I remember thinking to myself, I wonder what kind of year this is going to be. And I made it for birdie, shot 63, and, you know, won the tournament. And I didn't feel very confident going in. I felt like I wasn't hitting it very well. I was kind of questioning. I remember praying, Lord, if you want me to do something else, let me know.
That's amazing.
I also remember standing over that putt and saying, what kind of year is this going to be? And I made it. I do remember being paired with Nancy and actually Ray, you know, Knight was caddying for her that week. So it was a great win for me, certainly.
Yeah, it was going to be a player of the year is what it was going to be. Yeah. As leading money winner and winning six times. So not a bad year. Interesting thought, though, early on.
Yeah, very much so. But I was hot at the beginning. I think I won three out of the first eight events on the tour. And I said, gosh, I'm doing better than most of the baseball players in terms of my batting average. I'm 3 for 8, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
That's pretty good. You had the second win was your third at the Wimpens Kemper Open, this again in Princeville. And this was by 2 over Jane Geddes. So you went back to back there.
Okay. Yeah. And again, you know, once you play well on a course, you certainly have confidence. But, you know, Princeville had, at that time, there were 3 9-hole courses, and I think we didn't necessarily play the same 2 9s each time. We switched, I believe, one of the years. And but it was you know, how can you get upset when you go to Hawaii? It was always a great place to go. Yeah. And because it was telecast on NBC, we had like a 1 o'clock finish time on the weekend. So we played really early, you know, so we could finish by, you know, 6 o'clock East Coast time, right? So,
right.
You know, so we're done playing. And I remember, you know, going on a rafting trip, you know, in the afternoon, and because you had time, you know, because you were done so early. I mean, even as a leader, you're teeing off at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, just because of the early finish for TV.
Wouldn't you both prefer that to just get out of the box early in the morning rather than sitting around as a leader for 7-8 hours.
Definitely.
Yeah. So the next win was down in Florida, Pasadena Golf Club. This was the USX Golf Classic in a playoff with Lynn Adams, another playoff win.
Right. And we actually had played at Pasadena when I first was on tour. And so that was one of the courses that the LPGA had played for years and years. It's a nice old golf course. I think it's been redone since we were there. But I remember, you know, playing Lynn in the playoff. They had actually redone one or two of the holes, and I believe the playoff was on one of the holes that they had redone at the time. And my brother at that time was going to law school at Stetson, which was right there. And he actually was renting an apartment that was on the golf course at Pasadena. It was right across from the law school. So I stayed with my brother that week, and it was fun. It was fun.
Worked out pretty good.
Yep.
Then you win the McDonald's again for the second time at DuPont Country Club, beat Pat Bradley and Shirley Furlong by 2 shots.
Mm-hmm. And what I remember from the last round was that Shirley had a pretty quick start. I think she birdied 2 of the first 4 holes and was leading. And then I was just trying to hang in there. And then as the round went on, you know, Shirley faltered a little bit, and I had a couple birdies somewhere along the way and managed to win.
So you liked the DuPont Country Club. You must have had some close finishes in the LPGA. I would have thought you might have had a couple of wins there in the LPGA Championship, having been contested there 11 years in a row. Did you have some close calls there?
You mean when it became the LPGA Championship?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess I didn't. And then right at the end of my career, they moved the event to a course in Maryland called Bully Rock. And so I played there, like just 1 year at the end of my career.
Yeah, I think they played, they played at DuPont beginning in 94.
Mm-hmm.
I think Laura Davies won the first time there, and it was there through 2004.
Okay.
Yeah, and then went to Bully Rock the following year.
I only played at Bully, like 2005 was the last year I played, so I did play Bully Rock that year. And then I think they played there maybe a couple more years, and then McDonald's left as a sponsor for the LPGA.
Okay, all right. Well, you want to talk about the 1989 Women's U.S. Open at Indian Wood Golf and Country Club?
Sure. I love the golf course. They have two courses at Indian Wood, and we played the first, which was a classic old course. Very well defined. They had some of the tall grass or heather. You know, you had to hit it offline to get it in there, but it could happen. I remember the 18th green was huge. I mean, I think it was 52 yards deep. And I had a good first round. I think I shot 67, maybe the first round, and was leading or close to the lead. I know Patty and I were paired together for the last round. And I can't remember if she was leading by a stroke or I was, but, we were paired together the last day and I played pretty well. But it really wasn't over in my mind till I hit my second shot on the green on number 18. Because I think, I could have bogeyed the last hole and still won. And yeah. So once when I was on the green in regulation, I knew I won. I remember my parents were there at that one. So that made it special. And the Open, I don't know about you guys, but as a kid, I always said, okay, here's the putt to win the U.S. Open.
To win the Open, yeah.
And everybody does it, you know. Maybe, Bruce, for you it was the British Open. I don't know.
British Open.
So that's probably the neatest part about winning a U.S. Open is, okay, I dreamed about doing this as a kid, and here I am actually.
Here I am,
so
yeah.
That made it fun.
So question, was there water on the last hole?
I don't remember there being water. Is there water there? I don't think so. I don't know.
Okay. See, you had a 4-shot lead, you won by 4 over Nancy Lopez, we've asked a lot of guests this. How big a lead do you need without water on the last hole to be fairly comfortable coming in?
How big of a lead? If there's water, is that what you said?
No. If there's no water.
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
Two, three.
I mean, I think once you get on the green in regulation, you know, if you have a 2-shot lead or whatever, you figure out.
You're okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. You were the co-leader with Patty after 54. Okay. You led wire to wire, but you kind of faltered a little bit at the end of your Saturday round, which probably frustrated you a bit.
Yeah, I think I remember that. I believe I bogeyed 17 was a par 3, and I think I might have made a bogey there. And then I can't remember if I bogeyed 16 was a pretty good par 4, I believe. And then 18 was the par 4 that just had a huge green, as I mentioned, with a lot of undulations. But I don't know. Yeah. You kind of try to put that out of your mind, that stuff that you do wrong. But
well, you did, because you lost 4 shots to par on the final 4 holes on Saturday.
Okay.
So now you're teeing it up with Patty. You're tied in the opening round, and you go birdie, par, birdie, birdie to start the round.
Okay. If you say so.
You remember much about the crowds? Because this was the largest Sunday crowd ever in a U.S.
Was
Open.
Was it really?
Time.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it seemed like it was well attended. And then we went back there not too long after that, because I believe Patty won it when we went back there.
She got her second open win there. Yeah, so it was kind of poetic justice, really.
Yeah, that and that's what I thought at the time when she did win it.
Yeah.
And I think it was 1993 that we went back. So that was just like 4 years later. And I think one of the reasons that they went back was because it had been so successful in 89.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You became the first in the LPGA to win $500,000 in a season coming out of that tournament.
Okay.
I mean, it was a lot of money at the time. Yeah. It doesn't seem like much by today's standards, does it?
No.
It was a lot of money then.
Yeah. And I think I was first to $5 million and $6 million, you know, for career earnings, I believe. And maybe seven, but I'm not positive.
Well, as I mentioned, Nancy Lopez finishing second. This was her third runner-up finish at the U.S. Open, an event that she never won.
Yep. And I remember her finish to Allison Nicholas. That was, in Portland, where she was really close in that. And then she finished second as an amateur in Atlantic City, I believe, to Sandra Palmer. And that was the first U.S. Open that I'd ever played in. I played as an amateur. In fact, my real name's Mary Beth. And I was listed on the, the leaderboard, well, not leaderboard, but the scoring board is Mary Beth King.
Ah, okay.
Of Betsy.
All right. Yeah. Well, Bruce, she wasn't done winning yet in this year, she was player of the year.
No, it was not. Nestle World Championship at the Stouffer Pine Hole Resort by one over Pat Bradley and Patty Sheehan. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good way to finish with your sixth victory.
Yeah, very much so. And that one does have water on the last hole. I remember that distinctly. It's, you hit your approach shot over the water, par four. It was, that was a good golf course, very hilly and challenging. And the Nestle's World Championship, it had a limited field. The course was right on Lake Lanier. It was nice to play. In fact, I just played with two gentlemen from Atlanta this past week, and I found out they said that course doesn't exist anymore. It was developed, and so it doesn't exist. Because it was pretty, because it had a few holes that ran right along the lake. So it was very
pretty. Actually, a few years ago, Lake Lanier almost didn't exist.
Because it just got so low, right?
It just dried up.
Yeah.
It was virtually amazing. Empty. I think it's come back a little bit now. But anyway, well, let's go on to 1990. Three wins, two of them majors.
Yeah. Okay. How about that? Okay. Started off at Nabisco Dinosaur, where you won by two over Shirley Furlong and Kathy Postlethwaite.
Okay. And I don't think I played particularly well the last day. I think I might have shot 74 or something in the last round. I don't know what it says, but
75, actually.
75, okay. Yeah. So at least I kind of remember that. But and I believe it might have been on Easter Sunday as well, which would have made it special. But, just to win is to win, right? They never usually look at the scores unless they're you, Bruce, or you, Mike. So,
yeah. Well, you started off that last, you led by five after 54 holes. So you had a little bit of room there to play not so good and still win, which you did.
Okay. And, at that tournament, the wind was such a factor, too. More the first 2 days, because usually on the weekend, the tee times again, because of TV, were earlier. It was a 2 or 3 o'clock finish in the afternoon. But, if the wind came up, that often determined how the scoring went. And the predominant wind, it played into your face on 17 and 18, always on the finish there. So that made it a challenge.
Yeah. As we talked to some of the earlier pioneers on the LPGA Tour, those that played in the 50s, 60s, the title holders was their Masters.
Okay.
This sort of became your Masters,
very
didn't it?
Much so, because, you're on the same course every year. It probably was the most well-known course that we played on, that the fans were aware of. And, early on with Dinah's name attached to it, it kind of, everybody just said the Dinah or the Dinosaur. And in fact, when I came on tour to qualify for that event, you had to finish in the top three of a tournament was how you got in. And it didn't matter what number you were on the money list or whatever it was, you had to finish in the top three of a tournament to get in. I mean, people would kind of choke coming down the stretch when they had a chance.
Yeah, I bet.
In the top three. And whereas somebody did it, it was always like, hey, you're in Dinah. Congratulations. So it was definitely a very special event to get into.
Yeah.
The next victory for you had to be really, really something very special. You played very consistent golf, the U.S. Women's Open in 1990, but Patty Sheehan jumped out in that tournament and led by 9 shots over you, yet you come back and win the tournament.
Yeah.
Fond memories.
Yeah, I don't know if she – well, the circumstances were the most unusual that I played in on the tour. And I'm sure she mentioned this, but we played 36 holes the last day because of all the weather delays. I actually finished my second round Friday night late because there were rain delays, but half the field had not finished their second round. So Saturday I didn't play at all, and the other half of the field finished their second round. And then Sunday we teed it up for 36 holes. And because we did that, they didn't repair between rounds. They didn't have time to do it. I mean, you came off the course, you had about 40 minutes between your third and fourth round. And so I finished probably close to an hour before Patty's group came in. And, you know, looking back at it, had that been a normal event where she had just played the third round, you know, she didn't finish well, she could have gone home, slept on it, regrouped, and come back for the fourth round. But because of the circumstances, she didn't have the opportunity to do that, but just had to go back out and keep playing. I'm sure that was a big factor in how it worked out with me winning.
Yeah, it was a crushing defeat at the time for her because of the circumstances. I think you were 11 back with 15 to play. But by her telling, given the circumstances of the day, the heat and everything else, she just wasn't to a point yet where she was as focused on how to take care of your body, you know, throughout a long day like that, and just literally ran out of gas.
Yeah. And then plus the other thing is, as I say, if you have a bad round and then normally you can go practice, recoup and come back the next day. And, you know, she didn't have that opportunity. So it was a very unusual circumstance. And it's the only time in my 28 years on tour that I played 36 holes in one day competitively. So.
Yeah. Well, Bruce, Betsy joined some pretty heady company there in going back-to-back in the Women's U.S. Open.
Yeah. Joined many World Golf Hall of Famer members, Stacy, Burning, Capone and Wright, who had won 2 U.S. Opens consecutively at the time. So one of only 5 people to do that.
Okay. Yeah. You know, well, what that brings is the next year, which was, you know, you just get a lot of attention because of the opportunity to do the 3 in a row. And unfortunately, you know, I didn't do that. In fact, I almost missed the cut, but I came back and had 2 good rounds on the weekend and finished well. But Meg won the next year in Texas. So that's a hard thing to do. I mean, Hollis winning 3 times period is a great record to say. And I was paired with her in one of her wins the last day. And, you know, the open courses are always challenging. When I look at that, I think if I were to tell someone one word to live by the week of the U.S. Open, it would be patience.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Well, you finished the year off at the JAL Big Apple Classic at Waikagul Country Club, where you won by 1 over Ayako Okamoto.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that was... that was one of my favorite courses that we played was Waikagul Country Club in New Rochelle. And I won twice there. It had a really great set of par threes. It's an old Tillinghast course, I believe. And, you know, a little bit up and down. and I at small greens. I just really love the golf course. And so when you have that going, you know you're going to play well.
Ayako Akimoto had a birthday yesterday, and you got her by one the next year too there.
Okay. Well, one of those years, I shot 63 on Saturday, and I don't...
That was 90. Okay. Yeah, that was the first year you won.
And that was probably the best round of golf that I played on the tour. I mean, I shot 63 at the rail, but the Waikiki was a much more challenging course. And then I was paired the last day there with Beth Daniel, and we were kind of going neck and neck. And then Beth bogeyed 17 and 18 was a par five where you teed off. You had a kind of, I hit three wood and you lay up just short of a huge hill. And then the second shot's a blind shot over the hill. I remember I had 247 to the hole. Hit five wood to make sure I got it up over the hill, and it caught the downslope. I mean, I can't see this, but it goes on the green 7 feet from the hole, and I make it for eagle.
Oh, my.
And so that course really had the best round of my career and probably the best shot of my career, the five wood that, you know, went 247. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
I think we've heard a lot about that hill on the show.
It's it's hard to line up because you literally can only see the sky. So you're kind of trying to figure out, okay, where am I starting this? And it's a really good course. It's had a redo since we've been there, a Core Crenshaw redo. And actually, I went back. We had a Golf for Africa event there, so I've seen it. And they did a nice job. They cleared out a lot of things. But as I say, it was one of my favorite courses on tour.
Thank you for listening to another episode of For the Good of the Game. And please, wherever you listen to your podcast on Apple and Spotify, if you like what you hear, please subscribe, spread the word, and tell your friends. Until we tee it up again, for the good of the game, so long, everybody.
Whack down the fairway. It went smack down the fairway. Then it started to slice just smidge off line. It headed for two, but it bounced off nine. My caddy says, long as you're still in the state, you're okay. Yes, it went straight down the middle. Quite a way.